You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge Podge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modge Podge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, Channel 85 at MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, as always, David Goss here in the broom closet with me. And then out in the octagon in Berkeley, California, we've got Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. And Matt, the corridor between Connecticut and Boston is red.
Let's go, Huskies.
It is so red. There is only one legitimate Husky in that area.
Hashtag Huskies are red.
That is of the Northeastern Huskies and not the UConn Huskies.
From now on, the Empire State Building will be red always because Huskies are red.
And before we get to soccer and get away from this college basketball stuff, KU Jayhawks, baby, beat the number one team in the nation at MSG, so I'm going to throw that out there as well. We've got a big show for you today, and it's all about soccer, not about college basketball. Jeff Carlisle of ESPN will join us to talk about Jurgen Klinsmann's perhaps tenuous place with the U.S. national team. Wes Burdine will come on from 55-1 out there in Minnesota, where there is perhaps big news, certainly some big news on the front office front, and maybe big news on the technical side. Adrian Heath rumored to be the new head coach there, though it's not announced. We'll also talk about Benny Feilhaber. He is back in Kansas City. He declined the swan song of the Israeli first division, which Dave can maybe tell us all about.
Swan song? Whoa, disrespect.
Well, it would have been probably his swan song, you'd think.
Yeah, but you made it sound like it's a retirement.
No, I wasn't saying that. I would just say it would be Benny's.
Yeah, for
but,
sure.
You know, I appreciate your sensitivity to
this. Well,
it's
a Champions League squad.
Hey, no, I'm not saying it's not. I'm not saying it's not. You don't have to get defensive with me. Also, the son of a former MVP, signed with a Major League Soccer club. We'll talk about who that is. And then, of course, DC United went out and splashed some cash on ending the Benny Ball era. They went out and got Lucci Acosta signed up permanently. So we'll talk about all that. We'll get into the mailbag, some good stuff there. We'll talk about what we're going to do for Thanksgiving, which we're going to need some help from you guys with. But now for the sad part. 4-0 in San Jose at the National Stadium. Costa Rica laying the wood to the U.S., who are now winless, pointless from their first 2 games in the Hex. -5 goal differential as well. MLSers Johan Venegas and Christian Bolaños got things started, and then Joel Campbell, who else but Joel Campbell, finished off the Nats. And now Jurgen Klinsmann's job is reportedly in danger. There's a lot of chatter going on here. No official news, and we'll get into that in just a second. But first, the game itself. Doyle, Twitter was aflame. Dumpsters everywhere were combustible. This was not a result that was acceptable for U.S. fans, for the players on the field, for the coaching staff, top to bottom.
I don't know if that's true. This was not a performance.
Okay, good point. Good point. Because
they've
the
never
loss,
won in Costa Rica.
Right, right. The loss, I think, was expected. And there have been some not-so-flattering scorelines in San Jose in the past. 3-0s, 3-1s, things of that nature. But 4-0 is pretty unprecedented for the U.S. in, what, basically 30 years or so? This was, as many people described it, and I'll concur, an embarrassment.
That's
the best word for it, I think.
Yeah, and I think it. I'm sure the players are embarrassed, and I don't know if Jurgen Klinsmann is able to feel embarrassment, but he should be, and Sunil Gulati should be as well. Everybody involved in this should be embarrassed. I'm embarrassed as someone who loves the U.S. national team. This was embarrassing. It's the most embarrassing loss I can remember for this team, and I go back about 30 years. So it's been a tough couple of days. I think there needs to be some soul searching. I don't know if that's happening at the top levels, but it was bad. It was really, really, really bad, and I understand why so many people, so many outlets who have previously been on the fence are now calling for big changes.
a lot of columns coming out in the last couple of days, all with one message. Hey, it's time for Jurgen to go. And we've talked about this on the show an awful lot. Jeff Carlisle wrote one of those, and of course we'll talk to him in just a second. But Dave, tactically, back to the 4-4-2, kind of the empty bucket that we remember from the Bob Bradley days in some ways, but the midfield got completely bypassed. Jonathan Brooks had his worst game in a U.S. uniform. I mean, I think he's probably...
I hope that's his worst game in any uniform.
I was just going to say, it's probably... That's in the top three, I have to imagine, of any game he's played. Getting megged, getting walked past, just not tracking runs.
Pretty decent first touch for the assist for Joel Campbell's first goal.
The ball over the top.
Yep.
I mean, that's an assist.
Yeah,
you're getting an
international
assist.
He settled that well. There's no doubt about that. But
that was the worst single performance by a U.S. defender I've ever seen.
Yep, and the silence there is justified, I think.
No, because everybody was thinking, wait, was Chandler actually worse?
Right. No, I mean, you're racking your brain.
Well, no, I started hurtling back through time and was brought back to a sweaty day at Giant Stadium in 2009 when...
I was there for that one, too.
Coach Heaps... looked a little out of sorts at times, but yeah.
I mean, when you watch this game, what are you thinking, Dave? What's going through your mind? Is you because you know, like we said, we argued about tactics for the first 15 minutes of that Mexico match. You're watching the team get not overrun, but at times overrun.
Yeah, I think it's a culmination, and you want a cycle to be a culmination of your style coming to, you know, where the team looks at its best, and I think it was the opposite. I think it was completely downhill, the opposite direction. To me, you start in a 5-3-2, 3-5-2, whatever the hell you want to call it, in Columbus, you had
three,
to push.
3-4-3, I mean, we could throw a lot of different numbers.
You had to push Matt Beisler out left because of the players you had on the field, and now you start him at the start of a game at left back after you just watched him struggle at that position for an entire game and then sub him out for Orozco Fiscal. That alone made no sense to me. I never understood why.
Can I just build on that? Because Jurgen Klinsmann has been playing Fabian Johnson at left back for most of the last 3 years, even though Fabian Johnson really stopped playing as a fullback around early 2014 for his club. And the reason why Fabian Johnson stopped playing as a fullback for his club is because he was no good defensively. And we saw that in the 2014 World Cup. Well, after enough reps with the U.S. national team at left back, Fabian Johnson actually had an excellent defensive performance this summer at left back in the Copa America against really good teams. So now that we have that under our belts, what does Jurgen Klinsmann do? He moves him out of left back and up to midfield. It makes no sense because the whole reason that we needed Fabian Johnson in midfield after Landon Donovan was cut was that we didn't have anyone who could create chances. But now we have Christian Pulisic, so there's actually less impetus to put Fabian Johnson in the midfield and more reason to put him at left back. It's like every decision Klinsmann makes.
Yeah, but Matt, look,
and the
when
kicker,
you have,
well,
you
the
have
kicker
an opportunity
on all,
to play somebody out of position,
right.
You got to do it.
And the kicker on all that is he puts him at right midfield, so he can't even help Beisler. When Beisler gets stuck in isolations and situations. The whole thing is...
And by the way, Costa Rica came out and targeted that part of the field. No surprise there.
And they played well. They're a strong team. It wasn't even their full A team right now at full health, and they went to work on the U.S. national team. It's not the U.S.'s God-given right to qualify for the World Cup out of CONCACAF. There are good teams in this region. We are aware of that. Costa Rica had a better World Cup than we did. Yes, we did well against them in Copa America this summer in a one-off game. But this isn't something where it's like we're just going to march in and, you know, put together bad results and get – or put together bad performances and get results.
Look, Johan Venegas has not sniffed the field the second half of the season for Montreal Impact. They play him up top, Costa Rica do. Sit Joel Campbell on the bench, and he terrorizes this back line. Gets that first goal on a play that I think left everyone scratching their heads. Omar Gonzalez fails to close it down, but there's a big hole on the left side that they exploited over and over, and Venegas almost had a goal from that position earlier. No close down, easy ball. Venegas heads it in. But I knew Venegas was going to have Brooks in his pocket from about the third minute when they got in that little clash, and Brooks is all riled up, and Venegas is just smiling at him and just saying, yeah, buddy, I got in your head. I got in your head now. Let's see what happens. And 4-0 is what happened after this game. Joel Campbell, same way. He comes in. I think everybody saw the writing on the wall. He was going to shred the U.S., and he came in and did it. And that second goal, yeah, look, the first goal, great touch from Brooks to set him up, to face him up. But then Brooks gets megged, and it's off to the races. Second goal, he gets in behind, just kind of watching from the back line in U.S. midfield. No pressure on the ball. Matarita, by the way, another MLS product who got an assist in this game. And then he salsas and passes it past Brad Guzan. And at that point, my roommates were telling me, hey, turn this thing off. Jurgen, after the match, finally sort of took responsibility. He didn't give us specifics, but he said, quote, I take responsibility and it is no problem. It is a learning experience for us. There's no doubt about it. We didn't imagine we'd go into the hex with two defeats. You want to have some points. This is definitely a moment to reflect about what happened in the last 10 days and probably open a lot of discussions with the players. Still no specifics there. Still at the end, pointing it back towards the players. It's not about 10 days. That's the part that it should be obvious.
And this, it's the same conversation that we had after the Mexico game. There's a lot to talk about. The one new question, if let's say everything remains the same, is did the players quit on Jurgen Klinsmann? And if they did, and he remains the manager, do you change out the players? Because this isn't just the start of qualifying. This is Gold Cup plus the last round of qualifying plus Copa America. This isn't supposed to be, well, we're still figuring ourselves out. They're supposed to be in a decent place. They just went to a semifinal. So this isn't, I don't know who I have. I don't know what I have in my pool of players. Let me figure it out. The lineup out there, or not the lineup out there, but the rosters he's calling in are pieces that we've seen come together. So I don't think you can restart right now. And I understand you're going to have a January camp to look at some pieces and look at people in different places.
And also, why would you restart?
If you think the players just gave up on you and you remain to be the manager, how can you not?
I guess so, but I don't know who you go with. He's got a group of players that can get the job done. And I look back at –
How about a team with like Dax McCarty and Benny Failhaber?
Yeah.
Alfredo Morales.
Yeah,
well, I could name some guys. He's not
I can too, but he can't call those in because he's burned those bridges have been burned, or he hasn't done that in the past. He hasn't set himself up for this possibility. Look, when they had the crisis at the beginning of the last hex – that was supposed to be the crisis. After that, you're supposed to get it together and figure it out going forward. It hasn't happened for the U.S. And now, as I said, his job is being called for by an awful lot of people. Jeff Carlisle is one of them. Before we get to him, let's get Sunil Gulati on the matter. He was pragmatic after this one, as he will be. Very measured. Said the sequence of games matters. And, of course, these are two of the three most difficult games in the hex. So that's something to take a look at. But he also said we'll get together with Jurgen and talk about this, because these results, obviously, are not what we're looking for. Matt, I'm going to put you out here. You've been a critic of Klinsmann for a long time now. Is it time? Is it time for Jurgen Klinsmann to move on, for U.S. soccer to move on?
Look, I don't – just as policy, I don't call for people to lose their jobs, because it's not just Jurgen Klinsmann. It's people on the staff. It's people in operations. It's all that. So I'm going to avoid that question. What I will say is that this 4-0 loss was the worst – U.S. national team shutout loss in qualifying since 1957. It's the first time we've lost multiple competitive matches by four goals in the same year since 1957. We've lost consecutive World Cup qualifiers for the first time since 2001. This was the most goals we've ever allowed to Costa Rica in a single match in the history of the rivalry. In terms of games against top 20 teams, Jurgen Klinsmann has a worse record and worse points per game than Bob Bradley, than Bruce Arena, than Bora Milutinovic, and worse than Steve Sampson.
Ooh.
Yeah. We're 0-2 in the hexagonal for the first time in history.
Guess the pizza from Pablo
We had
Howard.
The first three-game losing streak since 1997. We had our first four-game home winless streak against CONCACAF opponents since LBJ was president, since 1965. Under Jurgen Klinsmann, we had our first loss in a qualifier to a Caribbean team since 1969. First ever loss to Jamaica, first ever home loss to Jamaica. We're winless in six tries against a top 10 team, 0-5-1. The list goes on. It's a butcher's bill, and I hope Sunil Gulati understands that.
Here's some of what's being reported right now. Doug McIntyre, Jeff Carlisle's counterpart there at ESPN, is saying that the U.S. soccer has been in contact with Bruce Arena, Peter Vermees in the last 12 months. Of course, U.S. soccer declined comment on this. Also, Tab Ramos has been mentioned as a guy who might be able to walk into this. Steve Goff of the Washington Post reporting the other day that U.S. soccer had reached out to Bruce Arena with feelers about him perhaps coming into this job. And remember, Bruce said earlier this year that he could perhaps would be interested in this if it came open. Not that he was advocating for Jurgen to leave, but that if the job came open, he might be interested in this story. Also, some news from McIntyre. Apparently, Arena's contract with the Galaxy was set to expire next month. We all knew that. But the 65-year-old apparently recently signed a 2-year extension with the club. That's via sources. We're not sure about some of this. We're still waiting to hear from U.S. Soccer with anything official, stay or go. But Jeff Carlisle is on the phone now. Let's get his opinion on all this. Jeff, how's it going, man?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, as always. We're just having a conversation that we've had a lot of different times, I feel like, over the last 2 years or so. We were talking about Jurgen Klinsmann, as you might expect, and I mentioned all the columns that have been written saying that, hey, now's the time for Jurgen to go. You were one of those columnists. Walk me through it. Why now, and what pushed, you think, people to this point?
Well, I think what pushed people to this point was just, it was not that they lost in Costa Rica, because as we all know, there have been plenty of other times where the U.S. has lost in Costa Rica, and almost always by multiple goals. But I think it was the way they lost. It was, you know, the dropped heads. It was the complete capitulation there at the end where, you know, I mean, you look back at the U.S. national team, the one thing that you could always count on was that even when they were getting beat, they were going to battle to the very end. They were going to fight and scratch and claw and at least let the opponent know that they'd been in a game. You couldn't really say that about the Costa Rica game on Tuesday. It was a team that just looked like it was not just beaten physically, but beaten mentally. And, you know, in light of, you know, some of the decisions that got made on Friday against Mexico, you know, with the tactics and how obviously flawed that was, I think you saw a team that was really no longer responding to its coach. And I think when that happens, it's time to make a change. And so I think it was almost a collective breaking point among people who have followed the team for quite a while that, you know, this is enough. I mean, there have been highs during the Klinsmann tenure. You know, you think back to the World Cup and how well the team did to get out of that group. I mean, opinions vary about whether it was a group of death or not. But you know, let's face it, the team did well to get the results needed to get to the knockout round. You know, they did well at Copa America Centenario. So, but the lows have been a lot lower. You think about the Gold Cup loss to Jamaica, you know, losing to Guatemala. That's not to say that these are easy games, but these are games that the U.S. has historically won, and now they're no longer winning them. And, you know, again, against Costa Rica, it just looked like a beaten team that really didn't believe in itself or its coach. So I think when that happens, it's time for the coach to go.
Of course, the million-dollar question is, will Jurgen Klinsmann actually lose his job here? And his contract has been talked about a lot, and it seems that it would cost the U.S. Soccer Federation a pretty penny if they were to end this early. Sunil Gulati says he will sit down with Jurgen and talk about this. What do you think, realistically? You know, it's all well and good for us to sit around and talk about it and write about it, but actual action from the Federation, from Sunil Gulati, what are the odds that Jurgen holds on to this job and continues on in this qualification cycle?
I think it's 50-50, which sounds ridiculously high in light of everything that's happened. But, you know, you mentioned the contract. I mean, $2.5 million a year, you know, the U.S. Soccer Federation would have to eat if they decided to move on from Jurgen Klinsmann. You know, then there's history. You know, the U.S. has never changed coaches in the middle of World Cup qualifying. I mean, they've changed coaches mid-cycle. I mean, we saw that with Bob Bradley. But, you know, it would be a departure from the way the USSF has operated in the past. And then I think that the biggest reason of all is the extent to which Sunil Gulati is invested in Jurgen Klinsmann. And not just Jurgen Klinsmann, the coach, but the whole idea of Jurgen Klinsmann and what, you know, he was supposed to bring to U.S. soccer. You know, he's supposed to bring this proactive style. He was supposed to revamp the youth system. Now, to be clear, I think revamping the youth system is bigger than any one man. I mean, I think there are so many obstacles in that it's hugely unrealistic for anyone to expect that Jurgen Klinsmann is going to be able to change that by himself. But again, that was the promise of Jurgen Klinsmann that Sunil Gulati hoped to bring to that position. And I think that's awfully hard to walk away from. There's this emotional investment there that You know, especially when you consider how long Sunil Gulati chased Klinsmann. I mean, he was in contention in 2006, and Bob Bradley got the job instead. He was in contention again in 2010, and at the time, Gulati opted to continue with Bob Bradley, and then finally he pulls the plug, and he finally gets his man. And so I think after that long of a chase, you know, to admit that this, you know, this, I don't want to say experiment, but this direction has, you know, reached a dead end, I think is awfully hard for Sunil Gulati to admit to himself. So I just think there's an awful lot of inertia that comes with trying to make this change at this particular point in time. I think the results warrant it, but it's a tough situation for Sunil Gulati, I think, both as president of the USSF and personally as well.
Let's talk about who might be able to fill his shoes should Jurgen lose his job. And as you said, look, this is no guaranteed thing. A much different thing to talk about it than for it to actually happen, and there's nothing official on this yet. Sunil Gulati saying that he will sit down with Jurgen and talk about it. We haven't heard any updates from that as of yet. But Bruce Arena has been reported as a possible candidate, or a guy that U.S. Soccer has reached out to. Same for Peter Vermees. Tab Ramos has been thrown in that mix. What do you make of these Bruce Arena rumors? Is this would this be, should this go down, the right move forward? I mean, none of this screams exciting. None of it screams progress the same way Klinsmann did back when he took the job.
No, but I think it is the right move. I mean, this is a delicate, difficult period, I think, for the U.S. men's national team. I mean, the hex has already started. The U.S. already finds itself in something of a hole. Now, if they take care of business at home, they should still at least be able to finish fourth. So it's not, you know, it's not a complete crisis yet, but I think the circumstances call for a man of experience, a man who understands the dynamics of the U.S. national team and who understands the difficulties of World Cup qualifying. And I think really the only candidate at this point is Bruce Arena. I think if it were at the end of a cycle, I think a guy like Peter Vermees would get more of a look. But at this stage of the game, you need someone who knows the ins and outs of the international game, and really the only guy that, you know, the only coach domestically that's available at that point and has experience in the American game is Arena. So to me, he's the only candidate at this point. You know, people can point to the fact that the Galaxy haven't been as good in the last few years, but you know, neither is Sporting Kansas City. You know, they've kind of fallen off since winning that title, 3 years ago. So, you know, I think, to me, all signs point to Arena getting the job if they make a change, and I think it would be the right move.
Jeff Carlisle of ESPN FC, you can follow his work there. Go read his column at Jeff Carlisle on Twitter, and then follow his coverage as the playoffs roll on. Jeff, thank you so much for your time, man. Interesting times in U.S. soccer. I'm sure we'll all be writing and talking about it more in the coming days.
Absolutely, Andrew. Anytime.
Always loving having Jeff on the show. Let's talk about these option guys. One of the things he said there that really hits home for me is about what's at stake for Sunil Gulati. And Sunil was hired, or he was elected, I should say, to be U.S. soccer president in 2006. From day one, really, Jurgen Klinsmann has been a target. So you look at what Jurgen has done with the U.S., and all of it comes back to Sunil, in my opinion. And this is his legacy, and that's what's at stake. It's bigger than just the results right now. It's bigger than just Jurgen Klinsmann. It also comes back to Sunil and about what his legacy as the president of U.S. soccer on the men's national team competitive side will be. So that's something to keep in mind. Doyle, Carlisle says, hey, look, it's time to make a change. We're looking at the Bruce Arenas of the world, maybe the Peter Vermeeses of the world, reportedly. Tab Ramos also mentioned, if they were going to move on from Jurgen Klinsmann, where would you move at this point in time?
Oh, man, I think that Bruce Arena is the easy answer and probably the right answer, because you need somebody who's not going to have a learning curve, who can come in the middle of the hexagonal and not have to acquaint himself with some of the subtleties of CONCACAF and some of the subtleties of the U.S. player pool. So Arena to me seems like the logical choice. Vermees and Tab Ramos less so, though I get the argument for both. Piojo Herrera is someone who does make a certain amount of sense given his experience in the region and his knowledge of the U.S. player pool. Those are the four that I would be jumping to look at. And then I think the key is that you don't, you can't make the contract go past 2018. It's got to be through the World Cup, and then you reevaluate in 2018 and stop doing these multiple cycle coaching contracts. We have to get off this wagon and into 4-year chunks. That is of utmost importance for the U.S.
I can't wait if Piojo Herrera gets hired for you to write nasty things and then meet him in an airport. I just I'm envisioning this right now, and it's,
you are the second person in the last 36 hours who has wished for Piojo Herrera to beat me to a pulp.
Well, so I didn't say beat you to a pulp.
Was the first one
put you in your place
legally married to you?
What
was the first one married to you?
No, she takes care of that herself.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Dave, I mean,
curveball, Jesse Marsh.
Jesse Marsh, that's
who he's been with the U.S. national team program under Bob. He's a different voice, right? I don't have a problem with Bruce Arena at all, but I think you can have some element of change, but also some level of a steady hand and comfort. No, he's not been the head coach at the international level, but he's coached in CCL. He's coached under Bob for the World Cup. He's coached under Bob in the region. He's coached in Canada. So I think it's someone who everyone in the pool would respect because they already know him, outside of the 18 to 35 players that come from Germany. So I think he could be an interesting option.
I do think that one thing Bruce could bring and would bring is the ability to inject belief and kind of I don't give a blank about the past, about the history, about what's happened. I feel like he's a guy who can focus people and look ahead and kind of push all the BS out the window.
I agree with all of that, but I genuinely think with the quality on this team, if let's say this was to happen now and they were to come back in March months later, I think whoever steps in would be able to do that because I think everyone in that locker room believes in their ability. I think right now they're in a place where they don't understand what's happening. Yep. They don't understand game plans and stuff. But I think that they all step in. I mean, Bobby Wood and Josie Altidore come off club form. They step in there. They have to think they can score goals against Costa Rica and Mexico.
But it's the collective side. It's that collective side that somebody's got to do it. And look, it may be Jurgen that has to do that as well. He has not lost his job yet. Still the head coach of the U.S. national team. A lot of rumors swirling. We'll see what happens with those. And, of course, we'll keep you updated if anything happens. Let's go to break. We'll come back with some MLS news out of Minnesota.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Whiskey River, don't run, run. They're all I got, take care of me.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. Let's talk some Major League Soccer. We'll get into some conference championship news and notes here down the line. Remember, November 22nd, the 2016 Audi MLS Cup playoffs roll on. Two games that day, the first legs of the conference championships. Of course, we will be building up to that, and Monday will be our big preview show. If you've got any desires, any questions, any queries, any guest requests, hit us up. At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com. We are going to talk to Wes Burdine really quickly here, the managing editor of 55.1 up there in Minnesota. There is some news about Minnesota United, but first, some Atlanta United news. They've revealed their new home kit. What do we think, guys? I mean, it's kind of what we expected, right? It's the vertical stripes. It's the red. It's the black. It's a little bit of the yellowish accent there. Doyle, do you have any thoughts here? Do you like the look?
I think that's so Metro is the only appropriate response, right? It's a throwback to, I want to say, the 2001 Metro Stars kit, which is fine. To me, I think it's a little more cookie cutter than I would have liked, but as long as the fans are happy with it, then there you go.
I don't care what it looks like as long as Carlos Tevez is wearing it.
Good point.
That's my analysis.
I saw this rumor out there just kind of floating around. I went and
I
searched it. I don't see any sourcing at all. I don't see any,
you don't need a source. It's
I don't see any
Tevez.
Quotes from Tata Martino, which is what people were saying, that he had said he wants Carlos Tevez. But
of course he wants Tevez. Everyone wants Carlos Tevez.
I mean, Carlos Tevez would be a lot of fun. I feel
he'd
like
be awesome. He'd be a great DP signing because he tries really hard. That's all you need, right?
Yeah, I mean,
guy's unbelievably skilled.
It's also just not about try hard. Yeah, I mean,
right, but he's unbelievably skilled. He's got great experience, and he would literally run through a wall at any point. So I'm down for all of those things.
All right, sounding good out of Atlanta right now. Minnesota, things are a little bit slower. The reports are that Adrian Heath will be their first MLS head coach. Of course, spent a year and a half at the helm of Orlando City SC in MLS, and many years before that with Austin and then Orlando as they moved, won some USL titles. Doyle, let's assume that this is true. We don't know for sure yet, but many reputable folks are reporting it that way. Is this a good hire for Minnesota?
I think it is, because I think you're getting a guy who knows the lay of the land, especially in terms of launching a new team into MLS. He understands certain mistakes were made in Orlando, and I think he'll do work to try to avoid repeating them. And it's also, look, it's a very different thing. Orlando had one of the bigger budgets in the league, and I think we can all agree that Minnesota probably is not. So it's going to be a challenge, but I think it's one that they found someone right for. And let's all remember that that team in Orlando played really, I think, attractive soccer. They kept the ball. They did a lot of the things that you want to see from a team in MLS. And I think that's what Minnesota will try to do as well.
Yeah, I think that distinction that you made there, and it's not just about budget, but it's also what surrounds the club and the ethos that it's run by. I think that's going to be much different in Minnesota, and I do think Heath could be a really good fit for that club. And it's not always apples to apples, oranges to oranges. I do think that this is a good situation for him. We'll see if he gets the job. That is what reports are saying out there. Wes Burdine, the managing editor of 55.1, is one of the folks following this close. You can follow him on Twitter at MNNiceFC. Wes, how's it going, man?
It's going pretty well.
Minnesota, I hear you may be struggling with a cold, but that doesn't mean things don't go on for United. Some rumors coming out, some news perhaps coming out, being reported that Adrian Heath will be the first head coach of the club. What are you hearing, and what do you make of that?
First head coach of the club in MLS.
That's a good point.
I would say that Heath is among the better names that were kind of rumored around. It was basically down between Heath and Giovanni Severisi, and I think that the Cosmos asking for a transfer fee for Gio was one of the deciding factors. I have an open mind about Heath. I'm excited.
What is it about Heath that you think sold the team on him, and what about Severisi did they want that they're maybe missing out on?
You know, I think Heath comes with, you've already got someone like Ian Fuller here who worked with Heath in Orlando, who may have been a good advocate for Heath. But largely something like this will be based on sporting director Manny Lagos's judgment. You know, Manny knows just about everyone, you know, in the small world of American soccer. And I think Heath has experience with the expansion draft, with the expansion team, and did, I think, a pretty impressive job for being an expansion team with Orlando that first year. So I think that probably helps. I think Gio was impressive because he really has done an amazing job with the New York Cosmos, and it isn't just about the fact that they have a big roster. I think that Gio definitely should come to MLS sometime soon, because I think that he would be a very, very good manager for MLS.
Of course, a guy that NASL fans are familiar with and Minnesota United fans have been familiar with for the last couple of years. Let's talk about some other moves here. That's not the only thing going on. This one is official. Amos McGee has been hired as the director of player personnel, coming over after being an assistant coach with DC United and the Portland Timbers. In the release, in those quotes that came out afterwards as well, it kind of sounds like this is a hire based on the fact that, one, he's got an extensive history with Minnesota, but two, he seems like he's a pragmatic guy that's maybe going to go after bargains or undervalued players, and that seems pretty important to Manny and the front office there, no?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, with Amos, he is a legend of Minnesota soccer. He's the highest... has the most goals scored in the kind of modern era post 1990, and was head coach for a little while here. And then he left and went to Portland, helped them through an expansion there. And then when he went to D.C. in 2014, it was almost like an expansion when, you know, after the 2013 season, everything, a lot of things changed for them. I think that it's really great to have a guy like Amos come back to Minnesota, who has gotten a lot of experience. He's very well liked here by people who, you know, were around back then. And also what he can really bring is Minnesota wants to build a club that is in this kind of, they'll talk about value and assets, but they want to basically, they don't want to spend and buy a Bastian Schweinsteiger. That's not going to be their deal. And with Portland and DC, you know, Amos was able to help them be part of a process where they were finding really good targets in drafts, as well as really good, affordable designated players.
Let's talk about players. That's the big question here. Just a couple guys signed from the current club. Christian Ramirez is a guy that everybody's looking at and saying, will this get done? What's the news on the player front? Should we see signings incoming soon, or what's the status of Ramirez? Is he a shoe-in for this team, or is there a possibility he may not be with them in 2017?
Yeah, well, I should point out there are no players on this team right now. The Justin Davis and Kevin Venegas still have not been announced. But they've been we've reported that with 55-1 and others. So I don't think we're going to have players for a little bit. It sounds like we won't even hear about the head coach until after Thanksgiving, which is not to say that nothing is happening, but they, you know, Minnesota United works on its own time scale in terms of announcing things. As for Christian Ramirez, I have not heard an update on how negotiations have gone. Christian, you know, the club received a transfer offer from a Mexican team during the last transfer window, and it was rejected. There is a lot of interest from around MLS and Liga MX for Christian to play there. But, you know, I've interviewed Christian many times. I've written long pieces on him, and he's got a family back in California who, you know, it's a big family living in a one-bedroom apartment, and he wants to get paid, and he wants to take care of his family. So he's holding out, and Minnesota, I think, likely don't want to – well, I know that they don't really want to pay him what he wants. So I don't know. I'd say it's still 50-50 whether or not he goes down to Liga MX or stays with Minnesota United.
Something to follow up there in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Before we get you out of here, Wes, one last thing. I saw you tweeting about the season ticket sales. Always a big deal for these clubs incoming. What are we looking at next year? How's it going on that front?
I think I haven't heard an official number. I think it's still slower than everyone would want. They got such a late start on this. I think it's now, they probably realistically only need to get to 15,000, and a month and a half ago they were at about 10,000. So there's no need to panic, but I think the team and certainly everyone around here would like to see them just have handled the timing better and be able to already be at 15,000. So it's going, I don't think there's need to panic, but it could be going better.
Slow on the news front in Minnesota. I'm sure that'll speed up in the coming months ahead of the 2017 season. Follow it all at 55-1. You can check them out online. Follow their managing editor, Wes Burdine, at 55-1 as well. Wes, thank you so much for your time, man. Enjoy it.
Thanks, Ed.
Big thanks to Wes for joining us. Follow his work and all the other guys up there at 55-1. Let's talk Sporting Kansas City. Benny Feilhaber re-signing with the club. It's going to be above that DP threshold, which means he gets a raise. But he will be a TAM player, according to Sporting Kansas City, which, of course, he needs to be based on the DP slots taken right now. This is what we expected, I think. And there was always this kind of this chatter about could Benny leave, but to me that was always going to be leverage and negotiations. I don't think he was ever truly serious about it unless Sporting Kansas City really came with an offer that just wasn't satisfactory on any level and refused to budge. In the end, they did. He will stick around for at least two more years. He could have made the move to Israel, though, Dave, and I'm not denigrating the Israeli league here.
That's fine. I mean, I'm not a proponent.
Could have played Champions League.
Yeah, I'm not a proponent of that league necessarily, but that's a team that wasn't a big team, so they were trying to make a difference. But I think it's good for Sporting KC, obviously. I mean, he's been central to everything successful that they've done over the last 3 years. He's not at the – I mean, he hasn't fallen off, so there's no reason to lose him, but there's other places in that team that need to be fixed around what him and Dom Dwyer do. I think that's the key for the offseason.
It very much is. You've got to find some additional help. If you're Peter Vermees, Matt, where are you going? What position are you IDing? Where are you saying, okay, TAM money here? Maybe, you know, you wish Diego Rubio hadn't got hurt because that hurts you as far as DP slots go. Where do they go from here?
And I think they need to figure out if they can get their own Ignacio Piatti. They need a guy on the wing who can look, and it doesn't have to be as good as Piatti. It could be Chris Pontius, but you need a guy on the wing who did what Christian Nemeth did a couple of years ago and got double digit goals and was that secondary goal scorer behind Dom Dwyer. Someone who can change the shape of the game, threaten to get in behind if teams are pulling up a little bit, beat a guy one versus one because nobody was able to do that for Sporting KC this past year. That is priority number one. Figuring out the rest of the midfield is priority number two. I think they should bring Sonny Mustafar back, but I don't know if that's guaranteed. And then I think staying the course with a backline that makes sense. Iko Parra and Matt Beisler together, that makes sense. And if they have some early season struggles, you have to live with that and give them a chance to be better in September, in October, than they were in March, April, and May. And when is the last time that a Sporting KC team has actually been better at the end of the year? I think it's only happened once under Peter Vermees. And I think that's what they have to aim for in 2016.
Iko Parra re-signing as well with the club. Both those guys will be back. Now it's on Peter Vermees to figure out what's going down going forward. A little note, since you mentioned Chris Pontius, he is the 2016 MLS Comeback Player of the Year, 22% of the vote, beating out Frank Lampard, who I think should have got this award, or Kevin Molina, who I also would have been fine with getting the award. That's not to denigrate Chris Pontius here, but he played 23 games in 2015. So I'm not exactly sure what he's coming back from, but either way, he's the comeback player of the year. We'll talk about goalkeeper of the year in just a little bit. DC United, though, I'm not saying Benny Ball is dead, but
wait, I don't understand. You're permanently signing a player who was already on your team,
right, on loan.
Why is this your shifting philosophies? The guy was already on the team.
I'm just saying he was on the team, but you hadn't committed to him full time.
And we don't still know
that
he
they
will.
Were, look, they were just dating before that.
They were
now
scoring like four goals a game.
Relationship that they're going to be in.
They were scoring like four goals a game down the.
Okay, at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Okay, Benny Ball's over. I hear you. You got the consternation.
I'm just saying
your
you're late.
You didn't even let me say his name, which is Luciano Acosta.
Don't you dare say his name.
Don't say his name. Keep his name out of your mouth. He will be a DP for, quote, the majority of the deal, according to DC United. But in 2017, they'll use TAM to pay him down. They paid a fee to Boca Juniors for him. He's young. He was productive at times, Matt. Always the beef was, hey, maybe the final ball, maybe the final product, the shot is not always there with him. Do you expect mm-hmm. that to come in time? It seems DC United certainly are betting an awful lot that it will.
I think it came started to see it at the end of July, and he basically kept it up through the end of the season. He was a better player at the end of the year than he was at the start of the year. And I like the fact that they've committed to this. And I hope that they keep building around that young core that they seem to be putting into place now. And there are comparisons to be made to Mauro Diaz. I don't think Acosta is as good as Mauro Diaz, but both of these guys were number 10s who came from storied clubs in Buenos Aires and came to the U.S. to A, find playing time, but B, to find a better life for their families. And I think that this is a good path for MLS teams to take.
I don't even care how. I mean, I would love for it to work for DC United, but I would love for players like this like Doyle said, to continue signing in MLS, for MLS teams to continue looking for these types of players. So, I mean, obviously it's not on the level that Freddie Montero was for Seattle,
right.
But young South American playmakers, young South American attacking players who maybe still want to go to Europe at some point, but this can be a major part of that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an exciting step.
Be a stop there.
And I do hope that there are still minutes for American attackers and Canadian attackers. And we'll see, because DC have one of the best playmaking midfielders in the country in their homegrown program in Ian Harkes. So I hope that they find a spot for him on the field as well.
Speaking of young attackers, Jesus Ferreira, 15-year-old son of 2010 MVP David Ferreira, has signed a homegrown deal with FC Dallas. He's been there since he was 8 or 9. I mean, he's basically grown up in this club. Yeah, he is a stud. I think he's got 48 goals in like 50 games for their academy sides over the last
playing
year and a half,
ages
2 years.
Up.
Yeah. I mean, he's been pretty incredible. They sign him. He's likely going to have U.S. citizenship here at some point. Could play for the U.S. down the line.
Wasn't this the plan? Grow the game? Just bring in international players for their children to then become U.S. internationals.
Yo, Javier Morales' kid is going to lead us to the World Cup someday.
Oh,
I'm down for it. Isn't that the two kids at Boca Juniors?
Why didn't we get like Christian Gomez's kid? Like, where are Jaime Moreno's kids?
I think
Marco Echeverri.
They're still
like,
coming.
They should be in the league right now.
They're still coming through the academy.
Man, bummer.
But there's the two kids down at Boca Juniors, Sonora. I think they're both.
I think he's moved to Italy. I think he's in Fiorentina's Primavera team.
But they came up through that academy through a father. They were born here in the U.S. playing. I'm just saying.
Just
keep grinding. Just keep rolling
just
it out.
Scheming over here. While some things start and careers start for Jesus Ferreira, some do end as well. AJ Soares, we're sad to say, has hung him up. Concussion issues ending his career prematurely. He was a guy that I've kind of been looking at for the last couple of years saying, hey, MLS team, go get him. And there were a ton of teams very, very interested in him. But in the end, Scandinavia is where he stayed and is where his career will end. All the best to AJ Soares going forward, and all the best to Andoni Iraola going forward. He has hung him up as well. NYCFC found a defensive midfielder in him this year, hailing from the Basque region of Spain. Had spent so much time there with Bilbao, and now came to New York City. His career is over. Really did some special things for them. Congrats to him on a great career as well. Finally here, Andre Blake, goalkeeper of the year, beat out Luis Robles, Tim Howard, Bill Hamid, and David Bingham. Congrats to Andre Blake. Now it's kind of a waiting game to see what his future holds. He's been linked with some clubs in Europe for a long time now. I'm sure the Union want to hold on to him, but there comes a time maybe when they will have to sell. We'll see what goes down with Andre Blake.
Can I just say that is the only good thing that has happened in UConn athletics over the last 6 months? Congratulations, Andre. Fly the flag.
There you go, baby. Let's look ahead a little bit of the conference championships. Once again, November 22nd, the first one, Montreal-Toronto FC on ESPN at 8 p.m. And then on FS1 at 10 p.m., Seattle and Colorado, the lower seeds, hosting the first leg. We've got some injury news going down. Shkels Ngashi is doubtful. Same for Marco Papa on the Colorado side. That could be a big blow for them. Ngashi, of course, with the magic against the LA Galaxy to push them through and send it to PKs. Jordan Morris on Seattle side still battling a hamstring strain. Same thing goes for Roman Torres. Andreas Evenschitz's knee is still holding him out, perhaps. And Alvaro Fernandez, he has a hamstring as well. So a lot of things to watch before next Tuesday, but they have a little, 5 days here to try to get him back. We'll see what happens there, and we'll talk all about it on Monday. Also, 55,000 tickets sold in Montreal, guys. And then Toronto FC went out and added 6,000 seats to BMO Field. So this stuff is
which I believe
ramping up.
They're hosting the Grey Cup like a few days before this second leg. I think they expand the capacity for that, and it's remaining.
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact
details.
I'm not
an expert on BMO
seating. Do you want to explain what the Grey Cup is?
No, we don't have time for that. It's something that's happening
it's at something
BMO
with
Field.
UConn.
And then later on they'll play a soccer game there, and it'll be really fun. So November 22nd, check that out. Stick around for our preview next Monday. Let's go to the mailbag. We'll see you there.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, Andrew Wiebe, Dave Goss, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle here on MLSsoccer.com. All your MLS news, all your U.S. national team news right here. Also, Thanksgiving is next Thursday, so we're probably going to throw the show out, I don't know, maybe Wednesday night. But we'll get you something to get you through the holidays. I know a lot of folks are out there driving long distances, doing their thing, maybe on planes. Going to need something to listen to. ETR is here for you. One thing, though, I want to know what you're thankful for this year. We'll talk about that ourselves, roll back the past year, and go through a lot of that. If you want to send us some emails, that'd be great. ExtraTimeMLSsoccer.com. We've got swag to give away. It's sitting around this office. We look at it every time we do a show. Also, Twitter, @ExtraTimeRadio is a good way. Also, holler here. If you download the app, we're starting to use it to put out some promos, but we'd also love to use it to put your voice in the show. 15 seconds of audio you can send to us via that app. We'll put it on the show. Let us know what you're thankful for. Maybe you can make it into Extra Time Radio. We'll see what we can do with that going forward.
I'm going on Thanksgiving vacation to New Orleans.
Really?
Yeah. My family just does it by ourselves, so we were like, why just do it in our home? So we're going on vacation.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. So if you guys want to join, Doyle's already, Doyle's already putting the mouse on his finger, so I'm already freaking out. Let's talk designated players, though, because we always talk designated players when we talk about foreign designated players.
We do.
But what about domestic? Glenn in Mannheim, and he says, does the great Tim Howard fit into Monday's conversation regarding aging Euro-based DPs that are too injury-prone to sign? Does him catching a freak injury with the national team put him in the same category as Stevie G and Frank Lampard?
I think that, I mean, you could certainly make that argument. In terms of on the field reasons, there weren't a ton to sign a DP goalkeeper. Howard, as far as I understand it, was in off the field signing, in terms of getting sponsors involved and happier, in terms of getting the fan base fired up, and by that account, he worked. The Rapids had a higher attendance after he arrived, and I think their front office was very pleased with some of the business dealings as well. And look, that's the reality of where we are as a soccer nation and where some markets are in terms of what they want. The U.S. national team is still a gateway drug for soccer fandom in this country, and nobody at the moment has a higher profile than Tim Howard. So that explains that.
And let's not also, one caveat there, and I fully agree with everything you just said, Doyle, but I think some people may take from something like that, MLS is the only league in the world that does these things. And that's not that's just not the case. There's a ton of clubs out there that have to make signings from a business standpoint, that make signings from a marketing standpoint, that make signings to appease sponsors, but also get on-field results out of those players, and Tim Howard has done that. Now, you can argue till you're blue about the salary cap implications and whether Zach McMath would have been good enough to get this team here, but the fact is Tim Howard came in, played well, saved some PKs. It's a bummer for them, but as I wrote on the site, I don't think they're in trouble. I think Zach McMath can lead them to the promised land. It's still more about how the 10 in front of him play than
how
he plays.
There's also a wrinkle to this, and it's a little different because Howard's a goalkeeper, but you talk about Euro-based designated players. Part of it is the time it takes to get up to speed in MLS because of how different it is. For example, Alejandro Bedoya had never played in Major League Soccer. Now, he's a guy who's in his prime, or Claudio Reyna when he was a DP. It's a little different when you're coming back that you've already had the experience of the travel, the venues, what the teams are like to an extent.
And you're coming home.
Right.
You're coming home. There's something to that. You say, oh, you know, if I was going to Latvia for a big money contract, I might be like, man, things are different here, and I don't know how to make it work.
But the only reason they'd sign you is because you barely look like Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah.
The Latvian legend.
But I do just want to build off what Weeby said there really quickly. I mean, English players in the EPL get paid probably twice what they're actually worth, which is, I think, similar to what you were talking about or in line with what you were talking about in terms of MLS is not the only league in the world by any account that makes these kinds of signings. I mean, Mexican players, Mexican national team players who, you know, sign with Club America or Chivas Guadalajara, they make a mint. So it's not unprecedented, certainly, for what Colorado did with with Tim Howard. The only thing that makes it different is you have to figure out the cap implications as well.
Let's move on to Michael from San Francisco, emailing in to complain what else and about what else, but MLS playoff schedules. I'm not complaining about the playoff format. I'm fine with that. But it is the inconsistency of when the games are actually scheduled and how they are bunched together that drives me nuts. We had two consecutive weekends with four back-to-back games each Sunday. Why not schedule two games Sunday, two on Saturday? Now you have two games on a Tuesday night coming up next week, followed by one game on a Sunday, the Western Conference Finals, and then another game the following Wednesday night. Montreal and Toronto get 8 days rest between games, while Seattle and Colorado only get five. That's crazy.
Yeah, look, I mean, I get that there is some confusion here, and we talk all about how difficult it is to make this schedule from March forward, but it doesn't get easier in the playoffs, unfortunately. You're looking at, for some teams, Seattle being the primary culprit in this case, a little bit of a scheduling snafu with their building. The Seahawks are in it on Sunday night, which is when the game was originally supposed to be played. Of course, then that can't happen. You get moved to Tuesday, and then there's other issues going forward from there. But I do agree that it is a little bit confusing. The nice thing is that both these teams are going to get a big rest between before MLS Cup. The other thing you have to factor in here, TV. It matters. Look, you have to get your games in the playoffs on ESPN, on FS1. You have to make your partners happy. And your partners, in large part, already have schedules lined up for those channels. You can't just come out and say, this is the best time for MLS and its fans. This is the time we'll get. They have other things to balance on their end as well. So, as with everything, business, competitive, it all comes down to a big balancing act. And this is where it ended up. And I know why it's confusing for folks. But what I will say is that ultimately, both teams on both conferences have to deal with the same thing. That's competitive. That's fair to me. Then it's about rest before MLS Cup. So that's the long and the short. And by long and the short, I mean mostly the long and not a whole lot of short.
We talked U.S. men's national team. We talked about the potential of Jurgen Klinsmann leaving. And obviously Bruce Arena, the big name that we talked about to take over. Kevin Loyola from Uruguay, he emailed in. He sent us a tweet saying, Marcelo Bielsa. Is still available. Is still free. So if you want
to... Wasn't he linked with like the technical director job there at one point?
You want to go big, you can... do that or go home. Jim Manolisa on
Twitter.
Well, you are going home.
Who's going home?
I'm sending you home. If you don't go big, I'm sending you home.
Okay.
Jim Manolisa wants to know, what if Klinsmann and Ellis both swapped U.S. teams? I would say that both teams would be in a lot of trouble, which they might be already. Bobby Berger says the only option to save this qualifying is bringing in Bruce Arena, we're a defeated bunch. And Eduardo Mendez on Twitter.
Yeah.
Matt Doyle on Extra Time Radio. Quote, man for man, USMNT is a more talented team than Costa Rica, unquote. I'm about to rip this quote to shreds.
Now, I don't see any follow-up tweets here on the rundown from Eduardo Mendez, so...
I don't think he needs one if his team wins 4-0. Boom.
That's probably a good point.
Costa Rican mic drop.
But look, man for man, I don't think there's not really any arguing that talent, raw talent
ooh,
and form...
Ooh.
You don't. I mean, Michael Imania has like 100 and something caps for Costa Rica.
Yeah, I understand that, but he's like, but Giancarlo Gonzalez could start.
That's chiefest USA legend, Michael Imania, to you.
Giancarlo Gonzalez could start for the U.S. national team, as could Gamboa and Oviedo, as could probably Borges.
I don't think Gonzalez starts over Cameron or Brooks.
Well, you're assuming that Cameron and Brooks are the starting center backs.
But what if Brooks has to play against Costa Rica? Like, what if?
No, but I'm just saying, I think there's a number of players for Costa Rica that would start for the U.S. national team.
Come on. The U.S. has more talent than Costa Rica. It's not, oh my God, they're minnows. It's the U.S. has more talent than Costa Rica, and that's fine. But you know, people are also free to disagree, however wrong they might be.
Man for man also doesn't mean like every single player 1 through 18. It just means on the whole, like if you're adding up the talent here, one side has more. Which doesn't mean that hey, if I compare both your center backs, I'm going to win that battle every time.
Right.
Either way, Eduardo, we're just trolling you right now. Always like to hear from you, man. That's all we have for this show. Thanks to Wes Burdine and Jeff Carlisle for joining us. We want to hear from you as always. We got swag to give away. We want to know what you're thankful for as well for next week. At Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLS Soccer Tom, or hit us up on Holler here. You know what? That's it. I'm going home, Dave. I'm going home.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.